Welcome to the American Anthropological Association and Canadian Anthropological Society's podcast mini-series in support of the 2023 annual meeting. I'm your host, Matt Arts, and on this mini-series, we'll be talking with the AAA and CASCA members about the theme of transitions and how it relates to their work in Toronto. We'll also get their input on the Greater Toronto Area and what they think is important to experience when you are in town for the conference. We hope you enjoy the conversation. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the next installment of the AAA and CASCA Annual Meeting podcast. The theme this year is transitions. The conference is being held in Toronto, November 15th through the 19th. I'm Matt Arts. I'm here today with Kara Krimpotich and Naomi Adelson. Kara is an associate professor at the University of Toronto Faculty of Information, and Naomi is professor and associate vice president of research and innovation at Toronto Metropolitan University. So I thank you both for joining us and taking the time today. Kara, would you mind just starting and give us a quick kind of rundown of how you got interested in anthropology?
Sure. Thanks, Matt, for having me. I studied anthropology at Trent University here in Canada and was really interested in archaeology and thought maybe I would do South American archaeology, but I needed to work in the summer and couldn't go on the field school. And so I switched to working in museum anthropology, and now I identify as a museum anthropologist. I really like working with communities and working with the living. And having said that, I've done a lot of work in repatriation. And a lot of work supporting reconnection between communities and their cultural belongings that are in museums around the world.
And for anybody who, you know, maybe has not heard the exact term of museum anthropologist, how would you define that?
Museum anthropologists are interested in culture from two directions. So we're interested in the ways material culture can help us understand cultures and people, but we're also interested in museums as cultural institutions and expressions of the people who make them.
And Naomi, would you mind sharing a little bit about your journey?
Sure. Thanks very much, Matt. And thank you as well for asking us to participate today. So I began, in fact, the trajectory towards my career in medical anthropology began with a short but intensive career in nursing. And the travel that I did in nursing led me to more and more questions about the relationship between social, cultural, political elements and health. From nursing, I shifted back to my academic career and proceeded to get a degree in anthropology at McGill University, where I actually discovered the field of medical anthropology and progressed through there to get my to get my PhD, and that then led me into the more specifically into the field of indigenous health, health beliefs and health practices. That was many years of my career studying areas in relation to indigenous health and identity. And more recently, I've shifted to data sovereignty, indigenous data sovereignty, and Kara spoke about repatriation, and I look at the focus on reconciliation and in fact, the repatriation or the transfer of data to communities. And I'm working currently on the process of data transfer of my original data to the community for larger and more extensive use on their behalf.
So I want to come back to some of what you both said and tie that together. But first, Naomi, so you also have this title, Associate Vice President of Research and Innovation. And so, you know, just speak to me a little bit about, you know, what you're doing in that role and the you know, sort of how it all relates to innovation.
Good question. The role is an academic administrative role primarily. So I look at the larger, more high level issues around policy at the university. So the work in innovation and research innovation is a larger scope than perhaps within what I could really cover today. But what's fascinating for me about being in these kinds of roles, in an academic administrative role in relation to research, is that I really get an opportunity to look at how research is being conducted, what the conditions are for faculty members to conduct their research, and how to support that, and how to bring, for example, in my own work and given my expertise in, as a social scientist, I bring that lens always to the work that I do.
You know, and so both, you know, the term of innovation, as well as, you know, I would argue some things that museums are doing to again innovate, but also to sort of take a stance and make a change, is sort of in its own way almost related to the theme, like, of transitions, in that, you know, we are in some sense intervening when creating and displaying. And so would you mind maybe sharing how, again, in each of your work, you know, you sort of embody this concept of transitions?
Sure. I mean, like Naomi, I'm quite interested in data sovereignty and Indigenous data sovereignty. And I'm interested in that from the museum perspective and how we work with digitized collections and the catalog records and documentation and archival material that's held in museums. And I'm also interested in that from a research perspective. And so in both cases, I'm pretty invested in community-led, community-engaged research where, you know, anthropologists moved away from the term informant towards participant. And I'm quite interested in this moment of co-research, co-creation, co-management, co-stewardship, and these kinds of transitions. And Canadian anthropology has a really healthy tradition of being an applied anthropology, of actually thinking quite a lot about who we work with, how we work with folks, and how that matters. Very much on the ground in people's lives, not just in universities and the academy, or not just in a museum. So I'm really interested in these projects where, you know, community needs, community desires, community goals are taken into account in the work that we do, right? And how do we think about research as not just good for a university career, right, but good for our society? And that's the transition we see in museums right now too, right? This taking up this idea of almost a social service and a social good and a civic good. So that's where I'm at right now as an anthropologist.
Considering all the sort of co-terms that you threw in there, do you see design, you know, intersecting with your work?
Absolutely. Right now, we are working with the Great Lakes Research Alliance for the Study of Aboriginal Arts and Cultures, or GRASAC. Right now, we are working to redesign a knowledge sharing platform online, and we're trying to think about family as a design principle, as an ontology of how we create and share a database and museum records, and what happens when we think about cultural belongings as family members, first and foremost, and how does that affect the design of the database and the website, but also how does that affect the design of our research process?
And, you know, so with a system like that, in terms of like cultural preservation, in terms of like knowledge management and documenting, even with like the trend of, you know, the whole wiki infrastructure having kind of started to play a role, is there a larger shift that's happening both in Canada and maybe abroad, where it is much more participatory today instead of, you know, some group documenting on behalf of another?
I think so. I think there are still some challenges with participatory online sort of crowdsourced material when you're working with minoritized or marginalized folks. When we open that up to the internet, we don't automatically have self-representation. You actually open up to a lot of other people now being able to speak about or speak for. And so we still have questions there that we need to ask. We still need to think about, you know, who participates in these processes, how, a lot of the important things are at the decision-making level, right? As well, who's involved in the decision-making. It remains complex, and a process that's never complete, I think, a process that's always ongoing.
And so, Naomi, would you mind reflecting on the transitions theme a bit and how that relates to your work as well?
Well, I would also echo much of what Kara said, and in the work that I'm doing in shifting data from my, you know, storage to back to the community and what that means. I take that one step further, though, and I'm really thinking about and have been working on how to engage the next generation of anthropologists in the work that they're doing and how they think about the structure of their research projects. And so specifically in Canada, we're looking more closely at data management strategies. And I think that what we really need to do is think very long and hard and on about the what it means, what Indigenous data sovereignty means within the scope of a larger question of research data management. And we talk a lot about principles, but in shifting and the transition from principles to practice is a critical area. And this is one where everything from the way in which a research project is constructed, co-designed, co-developed, everything from the way that it emerges to how the research is conducted, how the stories and narratives and practices and what we call data, but I don't like the term data necessarily here in this instance, but it is how that is collected, how it's managed, where it sits, where it lies at the end of the research, who it belongs to, who has access, and who has access both in the short and the long term, and what that means in terms of how we think about conducting the research that we conduct. I think that there's been and it continues to be a process of transition from, we are very much working, as Kara mentioned, in relation to the COs, to the multiple COs and engagement, absolutely. But in practice, what that means in very practical terms, what are the costs involved? What is the infrastructure involved? What is the personnel involved? What does it mean for the researcher and the research institution? Things like memorandums of understanding that have to be developed in relation to research protocols that would not have been thought of in past years and that are absolutely vital to the research process today, especially as a social scientist, as an anthropologist.
And so how are you finding the training of the next generation going? Are they embodying this? And
well, a lot of it is happening. Pleased to say that a lot of it is happening in Canada at the level of communities, where communities are putting into place protocols that ensure particular practices. But that still, I think that we're still in a trend. I hate to say the word transition again, but I think we are very much in a transition period here, where we have to really think about the implications for the. For the researcher, especially for a new researcher coming into these considerations for the first time. And again, the implications with regard to how a research project, a proposal is developed, what's considered within the scope of a proposal, how it shifts from proposal to practice, and again, the way in which a researcher will work with communities, individuals, organizations to ensure appropriate data sovereignty and the management of that data sovereignty.
So in there, you mentioned, at the community level, and that, I guess, brings up maybe a question about Canada broadly. How do you see, even beyond the scope of your work, and on a broader perspective, how do you see transitions with, Indigenous communities, throughout Canada? What are the sort of major trends that are happening?
Well, Canada has been through a large national, exercise with regard to truth and reconciliation. We recognize soon the impact of the residential schools. We have a day to recognize that. In Canada. We have processes that are changing the way in which the general population is coming to understand a very difficult history. And we have a lot of processes in Canada right now that address, are beginning to address the gross inequities and trauma of the residential school system. Our nation is in a period of transformation, and the news is sometimes very, very hard. It's very difficult. But we are working towards these express acts of reconciliation, we have a long way to go, but we're working in that general direction as a nation. Maybe Kara wants to jump in here, though.
Well, I think in particular, the featured speaker this year, Keisha Supernaut, is an important person for us as anthropologists, but also us as a country, Canada, to be listening to. And Supernaut's work through archaeology, through community-based archaeology, understanding the deadly consequences of residential schooling for Indigenous children and families is really important, right? And it comes back to that question of why do we do the work that we do and who does it serve, to what end? You know, Naomi's observations about Canada are all spot on, right? It's not unlike the US. We have a very difficult history, and Canadians, settler Canadians, we're in a process of transitioning our understanding of our own history, right? Where colonialism is not benevolent and the British Empire is not benevolent, and not necessarily just an achievement that we celebrate, but actually came with incredible violence and incredible cost of life. So, you know, Indigenous nations have been persistent and persistently asking for us to listen. And as a country, it's, you know, we're getting closer to that. But there's still work to be done. And it is destabilizing in terms of coming to, you know, reinterpret your history, right? And to internalize that.
And so I'd love to even get your perspective on, like, the, you know, just the local environment. You know, what is it that you see happening in Toronto that would be, you know, cool to share? What places do you like to visit, whether museums or restaurants?
Sure. I think one of the things that visitors to Toronto should know is that you may hear the city being called Tokoronto, right? Which reflects, I believe it's a Mohawk name for this place. It's called, it also is sort of understood as the carrying place. There was an important trail that sort of ran through the north of the city for Indigenous folks who were sort of moving through Tokoronto or Toronto. And one of the really fascinating things about Tokoronto is that it has long been a multinational place. So in terms of being an Indigenous place, we see sort of a very long presence, a very deep presence of Indigenous nations here, and multiple nations, right, who have ties and histories here. So for that reason, it's quite interesting historically. Folks can check out the Native Canadian Centre of Toronto, and they do Indigenous tours of the city. And one of the really interesting things about them too is that they take time to focus on the urban Indigenous community, which numbers over 100,000 people. It's one of Canada's largest Indigenous communities, and has a history all of its own, right, as an urban center. But I moved here in 2010. Maybe Naomi can think about how long she's been here. And what we've found as newcomers to Tokoronto is it's a very neighborhood-oriented city. It's a very walkable city. It's very multicultural. I mean, it's sort of a stereotype to talk about Canada as multicultural, but Toronto very much is a multicultural city. Lots of languages being spoken. Great food scene, tons of communities, you know, that gather together based on shared ethnicity. Naomi, what's your sense of the place?
I completely agree with you, Kara. Also, I've been here for a little bit longer than that, but also as still consider myself, despite the decades, a newcomer to the city, and still very much enjoy what you refer to as that multicultural city, and the resources that we can find here. The food scene here is unbelievable. You can find everything, and it should be great. Also, as you said, incredibly walkable city, decent public transit, I would say. Look at getting a day pass, get yourself out to the beach if it's a nice day. But but the beach in the east end of the city. But we also think about, in terms of transitions, we also think about the city from Lake Ontario north. And very close to the convention center, for example, there's the whole harborfront area, something called the Music Garden, really nice areas, again, depending on the weather, but it should be good weather, really great areas to walk to. Then up to St. Lawrence Market, this is an historic building and an absolutely wonderful market. Great, you can have a great tour of St. Lawrence Market as well. That's internal, and then inside this historic building. And then a little bit further up, where we've seen waves of immigrants move into in the last century, up into the region around Kensington Market. So you've got, again, a place that's just a delightful place to walk around and explore, Kensington Market. I think I would note at this point also, for point of reference, is that pot is legal in Canada. So you're going to see a lot of pot shops, not just in Kensington, but all over. But it's good to note. You should know that. And some fun things are Queen Street, pretty funky, independent, as well as those typical fashion chains with some quirky and lovely independent shops, and a great spot, great Instagram spot. If you search out Graffiti Alley, you will not be disappointed. One of your best Instagram shots in the city, aside from the CN Tower, of course, and the views from there.
That's great. And so you both kind of nodded to the weather. What should everybody expect at that point?
That's a great question. Variable. You know, Naomi and I would probably say, well, it won't be too cold yet, but that might be our local, you know, origins coming forward. It might depend if the sun's out, Matt, but you should be ready for cooler mornings, probably a nicer afternoon and a cool evening.
And Kara, just any last museums potentially, given your work in that space, that everybody should hit?
There's great museums in Toronto, from the very small to the very large. So folks will know well the Royal Ontario Museum, which is a provincial museum. And when folks are here in November, there is a major exhibition called Being and Belonging, Contemporary Women Artists from the Islamic World and Beyond. And this features 25 artists. There's also a new exhibition coming called Death, Life's Great Mystery. One of the things that might be helpful for folks to know is that if you're Indigenous, it is free admission to the ROM, and actually it's free admission for most Indigenous people to most of the museums in the city. We're looking forward, the Council for Museum Anthropology and the Association of Black Anthropologists, we're having a workshop at the Gardner Museum, the Ceramic Museum. And there's going to be the largest ever North American exhibition of the work of Madeline Adundo, seeking transcultural ways of working that are neither colonial nor extractive. The Gardener's free for everyone Thursdays after 4. I know Naomi loves the Bata Shoe Museum, which is a beautiful building designed by Raymond Moriyama, the architect. Their key exhibit then will be Bloom, Flowers and Footwear. They also have Obsessed, How Shoes Became Objects of Desire, and their permanent exhibition, All About Shoes. And they have free admission on Sundays from 12 to 5. So, and there's tons of great museums. Just get yourself walking, or get yourself on the TTC, as we call it, the subway, and check them out.
Well, thanks for sharing all of that. And Naomi and Kara, appreciate your time today.
Thanks for having us, Matt.
Thanks for listening. We look forward to seeing you in Toronto this November. For more information, check out the conference website at annualmeeting.americananthro.org. And if you like what you hear, please also check out the AAA podcast directory for other great anthropology podcasts, including my own, Anthropology in Business and AnthroTUX. Thanks again, and see you in November.